You ready?
This is the Mike Salk Show, serviced by Jaffco Plumbing and Sewer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Are you ready, Mike?
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Are you ready for a good day?
All right, rolling on here. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle, 710sports.com, 710 Sports app. Download the show at Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, you name it. One of our favorite parts. It's become kind of a great weekly thing is talking to Joe Fan, our buddy. Used to cover the Seahawks, of course. Joe, how are we? How are we doing today? The proud owner of a 75 you shot last week? Oh, my gosh. Congratulations.
Yeah, it felt like a superhero, Mike. It was pretty special. And then, you played golf long enough to know that my next couple of rounds, I felt like I'd completely forgot how to play altogether. So that's just how it goes.
What was your score in your next round?
I shot an 80 and then jumped to like an 88.
Golf's the worst, man. Just the worst.
Not the worst. I had to really scramble for some of those scores too. I mean, I had some shanks in there, and you're thinking, what's the deal here? I was a professional golfer a couple days ago, and it's just that that's how it goes.
It sure is. All right. Well, let's talk some Seahawks and talk some NFL. Actually, I wanted to start kind of NFL in general. What were your big takeaway from the weekend? What did we see in what I thought was one of the lousiest weekends of football I can remember? What was your big takeaway this weekend?
Yeah, it was lousy. I think the big takeaway everyone had was that there's no need for a 7 seed. And I don't think that's largely shocking to anyone. I mean, it was a money grab for the NFL. So you can have super wild card weekend. You get an extra couple games, and there's a game on Monday night and all that. I mean, as much as we want to talk about the parity, and you hope you see it more in the divisional round, and I'm genuinely excited for all four matchups. I would hope that this is the way things would play out, because I think these matchups in each conference are going to be a lot of fun next weekend. But at the end of the day, you look when the wild card weekend rolls around and how few really good games there are. And out of the six, we only got two good games. And even then, the Niners dominated the Cowboys, and they should have won that comfortably running away. And so it was the Bengals-Raiders game that was wire to wire close. And beyond that, it was just a lot of blowouts. So hopefully the next weekend, things are a little bit better and more competitive.
How far away from, I guess you could put maybe two categories on it. How far away from the losing teams this weekend are the Seahawks? How far away from the winning teams this weekend are the Seahawks?
I think they're in the ballpark of the losing teams, especially when you look at the 7 seeds. You look at, the Philadelphia Eagles. You can't tell me the Seahawks are that far away from the Philadelphia Eagles. I would say they're better than the Pittsburgh Steelers. The fact that Pittsburgh Steelers made the playoffs is one of the miracles of the century. But then, the best teams, I don't know, they haven't made it past the divisional round since 2015. And so it's hard to say that they're close. I don't think they're a player or two away. So I would say that there's a decent gap there from where the Seahawks are at currently and then where the teams are, that are going to be playing this upcoming weekend.
So what's your plan? How do you go from where you are now to where the teams that are left are at?
Well, now it starts with finding a defensive coordinator, and I'm sure we were going to get to that. But my first question to any defensive coordinator candidate I'm looking at is, how do we get the most out of Jamal Adams? We have invested an insane amount of money in this guy, and we have got to make sure that we are getting every ounce of talent out of him. How do we do that? That would be question one. The offensive line, there are a ton of questions, and you have to figure that out. You have to find a center this year. You can't run it back with Ethan Posick. Both of your tackles are free agents. Those are big decisions you have to make. What do you do with Dwayne Brown? And then I think you continue to worry about the defensive line. Obviously, corner's an issue because everyone's a free agent there. I don't think you can start from scratch. I think you have to bring DJ Reed back. And I think that's where the issue is and where Pete Carroll comes on your show and says, well, you can't expect this big spending spree outside of the organization because we have so many guys we have to bring back this year that I think we could all agree on deserve to be there, but that adds up pretty quick. And you consider Quandre Diggs, who's going to be more expensive this offseason than he would have been last offseason. I think he's warranted that payday. So you go down the list. I do think there's a lot to get to. when looking at Seattle's offseason.
It's so funny the way you said it is why I was laughing. I literally started today talking about how the first question I would have for any defensive coordinator was exactly that. What would you do to get more out of Jamal Adams? How are you going to use this guy? You've put so many resources and so much investment into him, and you really haven't gotten much over the course of the last 2 years, but he's obviously a talent. So what are you going to do to make sure that this guy does something for you?
Yeah, I think it's so easy to just like write him off and say, yeah, he's just a guy. He's a fine safety. He's way overpaid. This was a dude who was a top 10 pick in the draft. He was an all-pro his third season in the NFL. He's already made three Pro Bowls. I still can't fathom how in 12 games in 2021, he didn't have a single sack. I mean, just the disparity between what we saw from him in 2020 and 2021 is just so immense that, you know, now maybe is he not a perennial All-Pro? Okay, but there's no way you can convince me just 2 years after that All-Pro season he is merely just a guy, if not, you know, average at best. It has to be somewhere in the middle to where he is a true talent that can be a game-changing type player, which, again, I think which is why we're on the same page of it's up to the next mm-hmm. offensive or defensive coordinator to figure that out.
Do you have a name in mind? Is there anybody you like out there as a defense coordinator that you think is realistic?
I don't. I haven't gone into enough of a deep dive to where I could give you anything that I feel super concrete about. That'll be my homework over the next week.
I'm going to talk about this then a little bit later in the show. It popped out last night, and I was communicating with Daniel Jeremiah about it. DJ's great. And he wondered who would say no to a deal in which the Eagles offer their three first-round picks this year and a third-rounder or second-rounder next year in exchange for Russell Wilson. Those picks are numbers 15, 16, and 19, just so people know. 15, 16, and 19, and a second rounder next year for Russell Wilson. Who says no?
It's a good offer. It's fun sports radio fodder and conversation. I could see both teams saying no. I could see both teams saying yes. I really do think it's a fair trade. I think the issue on Seattle's end is you look at this year's draft and say, are those three picks going to land us the players that they, you know, we would have gotten in years previous? You know, everything I read about this year's draft class, even beyond the quarterbacks, is that it's not full of blue chip talent the way maybe last year's was. And then, you know, you're looking at it from the Eagles standpoint and saying it's a whole lot of capital to give up for a quarterback who is potentially has played his best ball and his best days are behind him and is now on the wrong side of 30. I would love to just like be a fly on the wall of the conversation taking place between the two. But I genuinely think it's a fair offer that both teams would have to consider. You know, if they decided they want to, you know, make a move and the Seahawks looked at potentially trading Russ and the Eagles were wanting to be in the market.
Do you think that, and we're talking to Joe Fan here, do you think that there is a desire? Do you think that if Joe, first of all, do you think Russ will want to go? Do you think that's real? Do you think he will put any pressure on the team to try to leave?
Oh, that is the question, because he would probably tell you he didn't put any pressure on them last year. And that's what makes this all so challenging, is you have the national media reports, but then, you know, Pete Carroll says kumbaya and Russell Wilson shows up and says, or even in his end of year presser when he says a no trade clause is really just to dictate where you can't go, not to dictate where you do go. And it was interesting, you know, he did stop short of saying, I will be here, you know, when asked, like, why don't you just say that? He didn't say that. So, and it is a long off season. So when we're just going into the divisional round of the playoffs, I don't want to unequivocally say, yeah, Russ is staying. There's zero question. I think he's going to want to see what happens and ultimately see if there are any teams that pick up the phone and call the Seahawks and if there's a possibility there. We know that if he stays, he's going to come back next year during the offseason program and say, yeah, I didn't want to go anywhere else ever. But of course, behind the scenes, he's going to peek and see, hey, what teams can A, afford me? What are they left with? Is it a place where I can thrive? What are the Seahawks doing in the meantime? Are they getting better to where I feel like, you know, we have a chance to make a run here? All of those things are a factor. So I do expect him to look around, even if he ultimately ends up staying in Seattle.
It does sort of feel like what most people do in their jobs, right? You start looking around. Hey, I've been in this job for a little while, et cetera, and I'm going to see what else is out there. I worked at, you know, one tech company. I'm going to go see what's at another tech company. And that's not uncommon. The difference is that Russ is under a contract and he's a franchise quarterback. So obviously that makes things a little bit more challenging or a little bit newsier if that's the direction he wants to go.
Correct. Doing your due diligence for Russell Wilson is far more headline worthy than you or I doing our due diligence and just seeing what else is out there. So I completely agree with you there. I don't think it needs to be anything needs to be sensationalized or dramatized at this juncture, but I also don't think I think it would be silly to just say they're running it back without question. Everything's going to look the same as it was, you know, at the start of 2021, and there's nothing to see here. I think let's just be patient. Let's see how it plays out. Let's see what the reports are that come out, and ultimately, you know, we'll discuss each part of it as it comes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they got to find a way. When you say that you think they're not close or not at the level, obviously, of the four team or the eight teams that are going to be playing this weekend, that to me means you've got to find a way to think outside the box to get there, right? If you felt like you were only trying to get to the level of the teams that lost this weekend, okay, fine. That requires a little tweak here and there, but that's not the goal. The goal is to become a Super Bowl contender, and the eight teams that are left, I think at least seven of them are Super Bowl contenders, right? Or maybe five or six of them. So how do you get into that range of those teams? And that's why you've got to start thinking about everything and considering maybe even drastic things in order to try to get there.
Well, and that's why in the conversation we have of what should they do with head coach, GM, quarterback, all of it, it just depends which lens you're looking at, you know, the last 6 years through. For me, it all feels stagnant, if not declining a bit. And last offseason was supposed to be the one where they were retooling and this and that. And, you know, yes, Russell Wilson's injury to me kind of feels like a scapegoat now to where they weren't playing great football before he got hurt. And so, you know, to me, it's now like, oh, wait, he's hurt and that's why it went south. Well, they may have been a playoff team if he didn't get hurt, but you look at the blowouts this weekend, four of the six games, and I would argue five of the six in the way that the Niners really dominated the Cowboys, and if it weren't for Jimmy G's boneheaded mistakes, they would have won that game running away. There is a difference between making the playoffs and having a shot to win a Super Bowl, and so I think that's an important distinction. That's the distinction many people have been making, myself included, when discussing the Seahawks' success. Yes, they've been in the dance, but how realistic have their shots been, their chances been, of making it back to the Super Bowl? And it really just doesn't feel like that's been the case. Heck, even, sorry, it's a long answer, and I'll finish here. A couple weeks before the end of the season, when Pete was talking with you, it sort of felt like he was dancing around the answer of, our division's loaded with talent and we're not there. So, okay, that's alarming when your cap space is limited and you don't have any first-round draft picks. So, again, I agree with you. If you're going to get there, how are you going to get there? And it seems to me, just as you said, that it would have to require something more unique and creative.
And maybe that's more on a
guys back and then adding an offensive lineman, maybe a defensive lineman and a corner in free agency.
Well, and maybe that's starting with Bobby Wagner and moving on there in order to free up cap space to do things differently in your defense. I mean, there are some different ways to do it. And again, there's nobody loves to talk about stuff like that. But if that's the type of thing you need to do in order to change the game and change where you're at, yeah, I think they've got to be open to a lot of different possibilities. Joe, it is always a pleasure. Love catching up with you. You can follow Joe on Twitter. He does a great job. Is it Joe_fan? Is that what it is?
Yes, sir.
Joe_fan with two N's. Find him there. Joe, we'll talk to you next week, hopefully.
Thanks, Mike. Appreciate you.
All right, there you go. There's Joe Fan, the proud owner of a 75 that he shot just a couple of weeks ago and followed it up with an 80 and an 88.
That's exactly what happened to me this weekend. Yeah. Much higher numbers. But yeah, that feeling of the, oh yeah, I played my best round, and then it was like I haven't played since I was a kid.
There's nothing more frustrating in the world. That's why it's the most addictive sport.
It was the nicest
there.
Course I've ever played. I was like, I couldn't have at least done something.
Well, that's probably it, though. I'm sure it got in your head.
The pressure.
Right? You're looking at it like, a little intimidating. Well, good stuff there. And I think where Joe and I probably find the most common ground is just the idea that where you're at's not good enough. You've got to find something to do to make you significantly better. But if you're not going to move on from Pete and you're not going to move on from John Schneider and Russell Wilson is hard to replace, what are you going to do in order to get great? And that's why I was kind of giving you my 5-point plan on the defense. I think you got to consider everything right now if you're the Seahawks organization, and that seems to be the mode they're in. Right now, time for Need to Know.
Need to Know.
15 minutes past every hour with Mike Salk.
Here's what you need to know up first.
Well, after a very quiet first week after the season, the Seahawks are now making some noise. Bob Condotta and Adam Judith, Seattle Times, breaking news last night. The team will part ways with defensive coordinator Ken Norton Jr. This couldn't have been easy for Pete Carroll. His time with Norton goes back to 2004 at USC. He was here for the Super Bowl runs, linebacker coach, went to Oakland as the defense coordinator, then returned following the Chris Richard era. I'm sure it was personally difficult, but honestly, from a football perspective, a pretty easy choice. Defense had gotten off the historically slow starts the last couple of years, players openly talking about not being on the same page. So, yeah, the bigger question now is who replaces him? Top internal candidate is definitely popular defensive line coach Clint Hurt. I would hope, though, that the process involves looking outside the building as well. Vic Fangio, the biggest name out there, he would likely have his pick of whatever job he wants. The Times mentioned Ed Donatell. He was with Fangio this past year as a DC in Denver. I like the name Brock brought up, which was Gerard Mayo. We'll see. He's right now interviewing for some head coaching jobs. But a young former player who had been with Bill Belichick in New England, if he doesn't get a head coaching gig, God, he seems like a very intriguing possibility. Number one question I would ask any candidate, and Joe Fan just said the exact same thing, how would you get the most out of Jamal Adams? That has to be number one. And then number two, how do you generate turnovers specifically through the pass rush? I think that answers to those questions would be very material as I went to choose the next defense coordinator.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Here's Odell Beckham Jr. He wants to throw it. Got a man down the sideline. It's Cam Akers. And the Rams aren't done yet with some razzle-dazzle Hollywood style. Gain of 40. OBJ to Akers, the longest play of the night.
Yeah, divisional round set in the NFL after what was technically a real game, but really was just a tune-up for the Rams. Kyler Murray, awful. Cardinals, awful. Rams, pretty good. And, yep, Stafford was pretty good as well. Strange stats, though. Only threw for 202 yards on 17 attempts. He really didn't need to do much more. Kyler Murray's two picks, 4 yards per attempt, made this one a pretty easy victory for L.A. They cruise 34-11. Sets up a final playoff matchup now. L.A. of now will head to Tampa on Sunday. Really bad slate of wildcard games we got over the weekend. 4 blowouts, 2 games that kind of backed into being close late. Average margin of victory of over 17 points. PU. 2 reasons why. First, 2 number 7 seeds. They didn't need to be there. And then second, the number 2 seeds played as well. Remember, those teams have traditionally had byes, and I think there's a reason why that's occurred. Raiders making a change after making the playoffs. They move on from GM Mike Mayock. Unconventional choice when they brought him in 3 years ago, direct from NFL Network. Mayock was a draft analyst for 15 years, but wasn't able to bring in enough quality players to keep his job in the wake of the John Gruden firing. Curious situation in Tampa. Bruce Arians caught on tape slapping player Andrew Adams and then elbowing him right afterwards. The always accountable Arians doubled down on his actions yesterday, saying he didn't regret getting physical and that he was trying to prevent his player from doing something dumb. Again, if you're trying to prevent people from doing things that are dumb, the time to do that is during practice, not during the game, and certainly not physically. I would say this is a clear case of the pot and the kettle.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Finally, Kraken losing streak comes to an end, and what a way for it to go. Played Chicago yesterday, afternoon start at home, looking at future Hall of Famer Marc-Andre Fleury in net. Well, they battled, down 1-0, down 2-1. Both times came up with an equalizer. First, it was Ryan Donato putting in a rebound. Then Vince Dunn doing the honors as well. Kraken dominated the third period, really played the best hockey I've seen throughout the third period and overtime, but it wasn't until the shootout that this one got settled.
Jonas Donskoy, mano a mano on Marc-Andre Fleury. He scores!
Yeah, pretty good. Donskoy hadn't scored a goal all year long, but he came up with that one. Ryan Donato had the other goal in the shootout. Eberle missed, and Jared McCann had a penalty shot in the game, but that didn't go well either. Nice to see them get the win. Honestly, second best thing they did all day. Earlier, the team revealed they've signed 4-month-old Husky pup Davy Jones as their official team dog. He'll be with them while he trains to be a therapy dog over the course of this season. They'll get back to it Thursday night against the Sharks. It's everything you need to know, all wrapped up in a neat little package.
Surprised you didn't make your 5-point checklist for fixing the Seahawks defense a 6-point checklist and handed it directly to the organization.
What do you mean?
Remember the 6-point checklist?
Oh, like Russ. Yeah. Yes, that's true.
He's I was got like, I was waiting for you to make that.
He's got his 6-point deal, according to, who was that, Jason LaConfora? Mm-hmm. No, I'll run through this real quick, and then I'm going to start kind of digging into this Russell Wilson idea. So let me just focus for a minute here on defense, and then we'll talk some offense coming up. And Albert Breer is going to join me at 8:45. The professor is a day off?
You believe it?
Who authorized this?
He's doing Hall of Fame voting. So okay. More important things.
Got it. All right. So he's not like
we're big time
taking a vacation day or anything. Gosh. So Albert Breer is going to join us from where is he now? He's at where's Bert work now?
He's at the still.
Oh, he's at SI. He took over Monday Morning Quarterback. So Bert will join us at 8:45 in place of the professor. Ready? Quick 5-point plan for fixing the defense and making it great. Number one. Hire your new defensive coordinator, okay? They've just let go of Ken Norton, so that had to be step number one. Step number two, and he's got to do this, is figuring out what you're going to do with Jamal Adams and how you're going to take advantage of an incredibly talented, athletic guy who hits and has the work ethic and all of those extra elements you're looking for, but they just haven't been able to figure out how to get him in the right place for the last couple of years. Number three. Sign a pass rusher, whether that is Chandler Jones or somebody else. You need premier pass rushing. If you do that, it allows Carlos Dunlap and Darrell Taylor, to slot into sort of the second and third spots in that rotation, which is really where you want to be if you have a premier kind of a pass rush, which should allow you to force more turnovers. Number four, and this one's hard, let Bobby Wagner go or sign him to a much better team-friendly deal where you're cutting quite a bit of salary and play him less, right? Use him more sparingly. Get more impact out of him and out of that position for the money that you're going to pay. So either let him go and use the money elsewhere, or if you're going to keep him at a reduced salary, reduce the playing time so that you're getting more action, more disruption out of that position than you've gotten for the last couple of years. And then number five, and this honestly might be the hardest of the group, find an interior tackle who can replace the production that you first got from Brandon Mebane and later got from Jaron Reed, somebody who can do it all inside, who's got the ability to stop the run and disrupt the running game and get into the backfield, but also to get after the quarterback a little bit like both of those guys were able to do. It is one of the hardest things to find in the NFL. It's like a puck-moving defenseman in hockey. Everyone is out there looking for that kind of a player. But you know what? You've got to find one because they are one of the keys to success in the NFL. How hard is all that? Well, you already got rid of your defense coordinator. Figuring out a plan for Jamal Adams is a question you got to ask the new guy. I mean, that has to happen. Pass rushers are out there. You just got to spend the money. It's your choice what you want to do with Bobby Wagner. And so really, of the five things, the hardest one to do is number five. Let's go. This is a doable thing. This is something the Seahawks should have in their blueprint for this offseason and something I think they're fully capable of executing on. Coming up next, I mentioned the trade proposal for Russell Wilson that came out from Daniel Jeremiah yesterday. It's just fodder. There's nothing real here, but I think how you answer it speaks a little bit to how you might feel about the Seahawks and their future. It's next. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the Mike Salk Show.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
All right, so Daniel Jeremiah tweets this out last night. Fun trade discussion. Eagles get Russell Wilson. Seahawks get the Eagles 3 first-round picks this year and next year's second-round pick. Who says no? So I want to give you a little context because you may not know where the Eagles are picking this year and all of that. They have picks number 15, 16, and 19. Okay?
Okay.
15, 16, and 19 in the first round plus next year's second round pick for Russell Wilson. Are you saying yes to that?
Not if I'm not getting a quarterback as well.
You don't have a quarterback as a part of this. You would probably either need to draft one or trade for
which
one.
Which I'm not happy about drafting a young
find
quarterback.
Find one or something like that, right? It's not a great year for that. It's not a great draft for that.
What if
they threw in Gardner Minshew?
As a bridge to whoever we might get next year?
Yep.
That feels a little better, but still not
what
really.
What if they threw in Jalen Hurts?
Yeah.
Instead of next year's second? Three first-round picks and Jalen Hurts.
Instead of next year's second.
Yeah. Are you going to take? Would you take three first-round picks and Jalen Hurts?
Shoot. My gut says no because I fear change, man.
I would if behind-the-scenes things are more deteriorated maybe than we realize. Like, if Pete and Russ just know.
You can't do it.
Yep. Then I'd say, yeah, in a heartbeat, take that.
You know, it's funny. I still think I would say no because I just, the mid-round pick, like, or the mid-first-round pick, I think I've just seen that movie too many times. And I really would love to see them with multiple picks near the top of the draft. Now, maybe you could use these to trade up or something like that.
Because anything beyond 10 isn't really.
That's kind of how I feel. Or certainly, yeah. I mean, the 15, 16, fine. I did the little draft chart thing, right? So the draft chart is, you know, it assigns a value to each pick and through all six rounds of the draft. And it's for trade purposes, right? So you know that, like, this pick is worth 400 points and this pick is worth 200 points. And so you put them together, they're worth 600 points. So if you're trading up, that's the value, right? So when you see a team that deals, like, a fourth and a second for a second, a higher second, that's how they get the value of what each pick is worth. So the value of those three picks, this doesn't include the second rounder for next year, but the value of those three picks in the first round is 2,925 points, according to one of the charts that I saw, okay? By comparison, I looked up, because the two New York teams both have two top picks this year, right? The Giants have 5 and 7. The Jets have 4 and 10. So if you were to make a similar deal and say to the Giants, all right, we'll give you Russell Wilson, what do they have to give up? Well, 3,200 points is a little bit more for picks 5 and 7. That was actually the highest of any of those three scenarios. Pick 5 and 7. Does that intrigue you? Would you rather have 15, 16, and 19 or 5 and 7? To me, it's a no-brainer. Give me 5 and 7. You give me two picks inside the top 10, I think that's a really interesting conversation. But let me also throw this out to you, and this one hurts, and there may be too many hurt feelings to even think about. Would you deal Russell Wilson for the Jets' two picks?
And number get that, your one back?
You get your number 10 back and their number 4 for Russell Wilson.
I don't like how terrible our first-round picks have been in the past. So,
right, but you haven't been picking in the top 10. You've been. I mean, again, the Seahawks have only picked one time in the top 10 and only twice in the top 15 during the time we've been around here, right? I guess three times because Bruce Irvin, too. But it was just that first year where they took Russell Okung and Earl Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
They became, you know, stalwarts of what eventually became your Super Bowl run.
Then I would ask the question of those checklists that you made, especially for the defense, and I know that we're not talking about the quarterback right now.
Yeah.
And pick number 5, 7 or 4 or 10 or any of the other Eagles picks, which I know are outside of the top 10, can you address any of those problems with this year's draft?
And I'm not sure I'm the person to answer that. We have a whole offseason to kind of talk through some of that stuff. I'm sort of just talking theoretically right now at the moment. But, I mean, you know, you could probably address your offensive line, probably address, you know, defensive tackle type of a spot. I don't think it's enough. I think it's interesting, though, that the voting on this says the Eagles are the team that says no.
Well, I mean, that's what I was wondering. I think that might have been the asking price for him last year. Is as high as three first-round picks still the asking price after this year?
And there's a couple of reasons why that would change. One, he didn't have a very good year. Two, he's a year older. And three, he's a year closer to contract renegotiation. So any team that is dealing for Russell Wilson, if that were to happen, has to kind of overcome all three of those things, which drop the value a little bit below where it was last year. I don't think his play will be a major factor. I think most teams are smart enough to see that Russ had a bad finger for most of the year. There's issues with the offense, et cetera. I don't think that that is going to hurt his value. But a year older, maybe. I think he's still in the range, though, where for a quarterback, I mean, as Brady's doing it at 44, I think there's going to be, you know, people are split on Russ, but if you find the right GM that loves him and thinks he's the right guy, I think that they probably aren't worried about the extra year of age. The extra year of club control, though, is probably a significant one. If you've got to renegotiate with him in 2 years instead of three, which really means you've got to renegotiate with him next year because he's a year out away from that contract. Yeah, I think that probably does lower some of the value for Russell Wilson. And so it's interesting when you read through the comments. Now, a lot of these are going to come from Eagles fans, right, who see their name out there and immediately start, you know, clicking on it. But 66%, two-thirds of the respondents felt like it's the Eagles who say no. And that's before I threw in any sort of a quarterback, right? Only 17% said the Seahawks say no, and about the same amount said it was a fair trade. But the overwhelming majority say, yeah, Eagles say
Eagles
no.
Say no to that.
That's too much to give up. Three mid-tier first-round picks is too much to give up. I don't think it is. I think the Seahawks say no to that, quite frankly. You don't get the quarterback. And you
have the added, people are texting in, you know, Russ has the ability to say no.
Well, I know that. Of course he does. I mean, you have to kind of play along with the hypothetical here that Russ is going to approve a deal like this because he's excited to go to Philly and he likes kind of what they've built. I mean, again, let's remember, Philly made it to the playoffs this year while spending 20% of their salary cap money on a guy who's playing quarterback for the Colts. That's actually pretty darn impressive,
yeah.
Right? I mean, like, they're paying Carson Wentz not to play there, and they still found a way to make the playoffs in what is obviously a down division. But if you're Russ, I like going to the down division, right? Instead of seeing Aaron Donald twice a year, instead of seeing Chandler Jones twice a year, instead of seeing the teams that I had that constantly beat us up here in the NFC West, I get
Bosa.
To go now Nick Bosa.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no thanks. I'll go face the Giants twice a year. Who do they have? Can't name a single player.
Well, and another team in that division, the Giants in that division as well, have been brought up a lot with him.
So, yeah, I like, or I'm going to go face the Eagles, or I'm going to face the Washington. Like, that division's weak. So if I'm Russ, I don't know, I might consider saying yes to something like that.
I am blown away by the amount of people who just love Minshew and want Minshew here.
Well, please, he's a known quantity. But please, let's go back. There's a group of people that right now today, if you offered all of that deal and said you were going to bring in Jake Locker to be the quarterback of the Seahawks, they would say, yep, let's get it done. As long as Jake Locker's here, we're good to go. I know who he is. He played in Washington. Got to say yes. And I think you see the same thing out of Gardner Minshew. All right, no John Clayton today. Albert Breer of SI is going to join me. What does he make of Russ's situation? What happens next for the Seahawks? We will ask him those questions and more next.
John Clayton's Morning Drive, every morning at 8:45 on the Mike Salk Show.
I thought you saw a lot of good things out of offense. I think that was a very positive sign.
The first and final word on everything NFL from the professor, John Clayton.
It just amazes me. I give it credence, but not total credence.
It's John Clayton's Morning Drive with Mike Salk.
First day off in the history of the John Clayton Morning Drive, I think. No, he's had a couple, maybe, but not since we started doing this show 4 or 5 months ago. So in his place, Albert Breer, our friend from Sports Illustrated Monday Morning Quarterback. Good morning, Bert. How are we doing today?
Mike, what's happening?
Thanks for filling in for John. You got big shoes to fill. I know you will do it ably.
I know it.
Well, I mean, you filled in. I mean, you took over for Peter King, so obviously filling big shoes is not
so
like
that's why you called?
Yeah, exactly.
Because of my experience. Yeah, that makes sense.
Hey, you did it better than me. I tried to fill in for Glenn Ordway. Look how that went. I mean, at least you're having some success with the whole thing. Let's talk about the Seahawks here.
We'll see.
You go ahead.
No, I just say we'll see. We'll see if we can make it work. Go ahead.
Better than me. Jeez. All right, let's start with Russ. What do you see playing out? We know that Pete is going to be here. It sounds like John Schneider's obviously going to be here. They're going to make some changes, and I'll talk to you about the defense coordinator thing in a minute. But how do you see things playing out with Russell Wilson this offseason?
Well, you know, I think the owner would like to keep him. That's just my sense, having talked to people and not to her directly. You know, obviously what she does is awfully unpredictable just because she doesn't have any track record. And I think that went for the decisions on Pete and John too. Like, I think there were a lot of people that didn't know because there just isn't a track record there. I think the hedging from Russ's camp is not a great sign. Now we'll see if they can work something out, but you know, there's been an acknowledgement for a while that this could be the last contract he'll do with the team. He's got 2 years left in that contract. You know, and then, you know, you look at the state of things, where they were coming out of last year, and, you know, really Russ wanted three things, and he viewed this as sort of the turning the page to the second, you know, half of his career. Number one, he wanted a new offensive system, a new offensive scheme that he'd sign off on. He signed off on Shane Waldron, and that, like, you know, I think you can argue, you know, about how that's gone. He wanted a new piece for the offensive line. They went out and got Gabe Jackson. I think you'd argue they're in a worse spot on the offensive line now than they were a year ago because Dwayne Brown's up. And, you know, I don't know that there are great pieces for the future there. And then you know, the third piece was he wanted a seat at the table and he wanted to be kind of a part of, you know, the decision-making process, the conversation there. And that's where the Seahawks drew the line. And so, like, I look at where he was last year and frustrated and wanting to go to a place where he can set himself up to make the Hall of Fame and make all pros and all that different stuff and compete for championships. And I don't know, Mike, it's hard for me to look at this and say, if he was upset and had all those demands after a 12-win year in which they won the division, where does he stand after a 6-win year? So I think there's still a lot they have to work out, and it wouldn't shock me at all if a couple of weeks from now we're sitting here and, you know, he's sort of, you know, found a way to come to the same sort of agreement that the Lions came to with Matthew Stafford last year to trade him.
So what is his value? I mean, I was playing kind of the what if game. Daniel Jeremiah had a good tweet yesterday saying, who says no if the Eagles offer their 3 first round picks and next year's second? Their picks are 15, 16, 19. Is that fair value? Is the Giants 2 picks at 5 and 7 fair value? I mean, how much is Russell worth?
Yeah, I mean, I think like the baseline that we've talked about with all of these quarterbacks is 3 first-round picks. And, you know, like that was the baseline for Deshaun, and the Texans had offers, you know, and before the draft, even more recently, that exceeded 3 first-round picks. Now, Deshaun's younger, so that's a factor, of course, and Deshaun's under contract for longer. I think Aaron Rodgers' market would go there, too. So I think it would just be a matter of finding a team that really believes in Russell at that level and doesn't think that, you know, there's been any decay in his play over the last couple of years. And so to me, I think this comes down to the number of suitors you have. And I do think that, you know, you're looking in the right places. You know, the Giants have two first round picks, not just 2 first round picks, but 2 picks in the top 10. The Eagles, their 3 first round picks aren't as high, but they have 3 of them. That's all current year. So those are more valuable. So, you know, I think looking at those two teams is interesting. I think New Orleans would have an interest in him, too. I think there are enough suitors out there. While there is some disagreement about where Russell stands right now as a player, I still think there are enough teams that like him at that level enough where the Seahawks would be able to go and get that 3 first-round pick price.
Talking to Albert Breer, filling in for John Clayton today. So Seahawks make a move last night. They let defensive coordinator Ken Norton Jr. go. I think that was, you know, pretty well expected around here, given the way the defenses have started the last couple of years. We've heard a couple of early names, Clint Hurt, who's in the organization, and a couple of others. Ed Donatell's name is out there. If you're looking for a young, up-and-coming play, you know, maybe somebody who can relate to the young players and teach the system and learn from Pete, who really could bring some creativity to it, who's out there?
Oh, I mean, it's tough because, I mean, there are some names and some guys that just got promoted. You know, I would have given you Jonathan Gannon a year ago. And, you know, obviously, like, he's like a rocket ship now. He's Eagles defensive coordinator for a year, and he's a head coaching candidate. Same thing goes for D'Amico Ryans. Like, I think he would have been a great fit, you know, a couple of years ago if he had been available, you know, and he was a linebackers coach. And, yeah, I mean, I think that there's that question, if you're Pete, do you want to project somebody into the role again? And promote from within again, or do you want to bring in somebody who's got a good level of experience? And so, I mean, Gus Bradley's, you know, availability is out there. I think the question with Gus would be, you know, has he evolved enough from what they were 8, 9, 10 years ago? And I would tell you this, like, I mean, you've seen where Dan Quinn is and what Dan Quinn's done in Dallas and now kind of reestablishing himself as a head coaching candidate. And obviously everybody in Seattle is really familiar with DQ. You know, one thing I would say about him and one reason why he's become such a hot candidate is because he's evolved everything that he was doing in Seattle. And they've moved past just being like the traditional cover 3 Pete Carroll defense, you know, both at the end in Atlanta and now in Dallas. Like they're much more diverse than DQ was when he was calling the defense in Seattle. And so, you know, I think it'd be interesting to look at a guy like a Gus Bradley or somebody like that who has background in the defense. I think the question for Seattle is going to be, have you evolved enough? And to me, like, Dan Quinn's sort of the model for that, right? Like, has Gus Bradley done enough to evolve?
How does it work, and we only have a minute or two here, when you try to bring in somebody who's been in a completely different system and merge them? And the name Brock brought up earlier I thought was interesting was a Jerod Mayo. And I know he's doing some head coaching interviewing now, and if that doesn't work out, you know, up and comer, young guy, just recently stopped playing a few years ago, but comes more out of a Belichick system. How do fits like that tend to work?
I mean, I think we've seen it work in the past. I think the best example might be right there in the division. You know, with what Sean McVay did, and I know Sean McVay's not a defensive coach like Pete is, but you have to follow me here. You know, when Sean, you know, I think at the end with Wade Phillips got a little frustrated, he started becoming way more involved on the defensive side of the ball, and to the point where, you know, he was, you know, partly responsible for building that Super Bowl game plan, the defensive game plan against the Patriots. And so, you know, what he did was he went back and said, who frustrates me the most? Who's the hardest coach for me to go up against? And it was Vic Fangio. And so he was like, all right, like, I got to find somebody who knows how to coach that defense. I want that defense here. And that's how he wound up with Brandon Staley. And then this year they brought in Raheem Morris, and Raheem Morris is from that Tampa 2 family. And, you know, basically they made Raheem Morris learn the Vic Fangio defense. It took some time, but now, I mean, you see what happened last night. It looks like it's clicked. So, you know, I think the key is the head coach has to have an idea of what he wants to do. And it's okay if you bring in somebody from the outside who has no new ideas. But I do think the head coach has to have that sort of concept of what he wants it to look like, because you can't have the head coach sitting here saying, well, I've always done it this way, and bring in a guy from the outside and say, just, you know, like, we're going to let you go. And then, you know, you get 4, 6, 8 games into the year and the thing's sort of a mishmash of two different systems. And yeah. So I think they have to be really, really clear about what they want from one of those guys. And Gerard Mayo, if he doesn't wind up getting a head coaching job, would make a lot of sense, because I think he would bring some new ideas. But I don't know that he's as just kind of stuck in doing things one way, because he's only been coaching for 3 years. I think he'd be open to doing things a little different way, and it would probably help him to evolve as a coach. The problem with somebody like that, of course, would be the potential that you could lose him in a year or two, because he is such a hot head coach in Canada.
Well, and then things may be very different here in a couple of years anyway. So, yeah, good stuff. Bert,
right. Maybe it doesn't matter.
You filled in ably. I think the Professor's fans out there will be impressed. So thank you very much. Good to catch up with you, man. We'll talk soon.
All right, thanks, Mike. I appreciate it.
All right, there you go. There's Albert Breer, Sports Illustrated, Monday Morning Quarterback. Does an awesome job, man. He does a great job. He did. It's a tough gig taking over for Peter King, and I think Bert's done a really tremendous job with it. Now, Pete's done kind of the same thing. Remember, that's sort of the Shane Waldron hire, right, is going back and saying, all right, well, what's frustrated us? Well, we struggled a lot trying to defend the Rams system. Let's go get somebody from that system, and that's what they tried to do with Shane Waldron. So maybe that's for the good, maybe it's for the bad, but, yeah, they've sort of gone down that road before. All right, hey, can I ask you guys what you would do? I'll open up the lines here a little bit on this Russ idea. I don't know whether we're going to get it. This is a completely hypothetical kind of conversation. I only have it because I think it speaks to how you feel about Russell Wilson, whether you want him to be here forever no matter what, whether you've got a price associated with it, whether you think he is deteriorating, getting worse, or if you think that his best years are still either right ahead of him or he's still in the middle of them. How would you feel about a proposal like the Eagles? 3 first-round picks this year, 15, 16, and 19, in exchange, and a pick next year, second rounder for Russell Wilson. Does that excite you? Do you consider it? Do you dismiss it out of hand? Do you prefer a deal like the Giants, where they have like the number 5 and 7 pick, the Jets with the 4 and 10? Are you saying no to any of that because you just won't deal Russ for anything? How do you feel about any of these proposals? 206-421-3776. Essentially, what's your price? And I don't ask because I'm trying to get rid of Russ. I only ask because I think answering it is a good exercise to thinking about where you believe that career is going and where the Seahawks are going. You may want to move on from Russell Wilson just because you think he's not going to sign in 2 years. As Bert just said, he said he's indicated he's not going to, there won't be another deal in Seattle. So if that's the case, do you try to maximize it now? And I could write you a script where in 2 or 3 years is really when you're getting ready to truly dominate again. 206-421-3776. We'll grab some calls. We'll talk about it next. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.